Ukraine to get F-16 fighter jets.
But this is a long-term process. At some point, Ukraine will need more fighter jets. Their capabilities are going to run out. And so the West is trying to align Ukraine with Western military needs once again, so that when the time comes where they have to transition to an F-16, they'll be ready.
Plus, is the fight for Bakhmut over?
Ukrainian officials acknowledge they now control only a small part of the city, but say their fighters' presence has played a key role in their strategy of exhausting the Russian military.
And later in the program, there's been a group of soldiers fighting and clearing land inside Russia, but it isn't the Ukrainians. Today is Monday, May 22nd. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. President Joe Biden announced a new military aid package worth $375 million for Ukraine during his meeting with Ukraine's president at the G7 summit in Japan. The AP's Karen Chamas has more.
President Biden unveiled the aid package at a meeting with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in Hiroshima.
A package that includes more ammunition, artillery, armored vehicles to bolster Ukraine's battlefield abilities.
Zelensky's response to the package:
my appreciations. We never forget.
Biden's fresh pledge came after the U.S. agreed to allow training on American-made F-16 fighter jets. The training lays the groundwork for their eventual transfer to Ukraine. Even before Zelensky landed in Japan, the G7 nations had unveiled a slew of new sanctions and other measures meant to punish Moscow over its invasion of his country. I'm Karen Chamas.
Among the biggest topics of conversation at the G7 summit in Hiroshima were reactions to China's perceived aggression, the visit by Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, and the new military aid package. VOA's White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wita-Kuswara traveled with the president and has this report.
As G7 leaders conclude their three-day summit in Hiroshima, Japan, with a denunciation of China's rising military and economic security threats, U.S. President Joe Biden sought to reassure Beijing that the group does not seek conflict. At the same time, he issued a warning for China not to invade Taiwan.
There is clear understanding among most of our allies that, in fact, if China were to act unilaterally, there would be a response.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky made a surprise appearance at the summit, invited by G7 host Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida.
By inviting President Zelensky to Japan, we demonstrated the unwavering solidarity of the G7 with Ukraine. And the G7 reaffirmed the importance of the free and open international order based on the rule of law.
Zelensky met G7 and other invited leaders, including Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi, who has refused to condemn Russia's invasion. Zelensky thanked the G7 for agreeing to provide U.S.-made F-16 fighter jets to Ukraine and for their decision to train Ukrainian pilots to fly them.
I'm very happy. Thank you very much. Thanks our partners. It really will help our society, our people, to save houses, families.
In a sign of warming relations between America's two closest allies in Asia, on the summit sidelines, Biden met with Kishida and President Yoon Suk-yeol, the leader of South Korea. They discussed North Korea's nuclear threat and China's rising assertiveness, two regional threats that have aligned the three countries closer.
I hope South Korea and Japan will have stronger cooperation on issues on the global agenda like economic security.
Biden returned to Washington Sunday to deal with negotiations on raising the U.S. debt ceiling to avoid the country going into default. Patsy Wita-Kuswara, VOA News, Hiroshima.
One of the results of the G7 summit is that the U.S. has cleared the way for Ukraine to receive F-16 fighter jets, something they've been requesting for a long time. Carla Babb is VOA's Pentagon correspondent. I asked her when Ukraine could finally take delivery.
So we don't know just yet. Right now, all we know is that the approval process is starting to train pilots on F-16s. There are several places in the West where they could draw F-16s from, because F-16s are very popular. So that will probably be ironed out in the coming weeks and months. Let's keep in mind here that just because there has been an announcement to train F-16s, F-16 pilots. It takes months to train pilots, and it takes even longer to train the maintainers. And what I mean by that is, just think about it, how long it took you to learn how to drive a car. Now imagine if you had to learn how to repair and fix that car as well. Very complicated process. So the maintainers will take several months, depending on how well they're going to be at fixing these F-16s. So we won't see these in the battlefield anytime soon.
So if it's not outright giving jets to Ukraine, what did the United States agree to at the G7?
The United States has agreed to look into training F-16 pilots, and the expectation is that at some point in the future, they can have F-16s from either the United States or other Western nations that already have F-16s. And the important thing to remember here is there is going to be an offensive starting. We don't know exactly what time that offensive will start, but these F-16s are not going to be a game changer for this offensive. They're not expected for this offensive, but this is a long-term process. At some point, Ukraine will need more fighter jets. Their capabilities are going to run out. And so the West is trying to align Ukraine with Western military needs once again, so that when the time comes where they have to transition to an F-16, they'll be ready.
So when we spoke last, you had mentioned the long-range missiles that Britain agreed to give to Ukraine was a real game changer. You don't seem to have that opinion now about the F-16s.
I don't, just based on my knowledge of what a fighter jet can do in a limited amount of space. Ukraine is a big country, yes, but it's still a very limited space where they could fly, and there's a lot of hurdles that have to be overcome. But overall, the airspace is so difficult right now, and you've heard Western allies say this over and over again. There's not much that you can do in the air because there are so many air defense systems in play on both sides that, you know, a few aircraft are not going to make as big of a difference in this war as the extended ability to reach targets in Russian-held territories. That can put the Russians on their heels a lot more so than a few aircraft coming in.
And also a significant diplomatic and political victory for Zelensky.
Absolutely. He's been pushing for this for months now. He knows that morale is critical to keeping the Ukrainians in this fight, because let's not forget, even though the Ukrainians have done more than we all expected, many people expected, they're still fighting a massive Russian bear. I mean, officials have warned that it's going to be a fight of quantity versus quality. Russians have the quantity. They have more numbers. And so Ukraine really has to rely on being the better military, the quality military, in order to push through and break any sort of stalemate that's going on now and make an offensive that shows real gains.
And Carla, speaking of Russia, what's the reaction been from Moscow on the F-16 situation?
Well, Moscow has raised concerns about how this will bring NATO and the West into the war. Officials in Russia have already started posing the questions on, okay, well, what's supposed to happen if these F-16s fly out of a NATO country to attack Russians? So real difficult tightrope walking will have to be done by the West, because that is a legitimate concern for Western officials trying to get these F-16s in. Once they're in, how do you keep them hidden? I mean, there are only a limited number of areas where has long enough runways to host F-16s, which would make them very easy for the Russians to target. So then you think of, do you launch the F-16s from an external country? And does that put that external country in danger of being a target to Russia? So a lot of big questions that will have to be answered before you see F-16s on the battlefield in Ukraine.
And we'll certainly look to you for some of those answers as the story develops. Carla Babb is VOA's Pentagon correspondent. Ms. Babb, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Officials from Russia and Ukraine dispute just who controls the eastern city of Bakhmut, More from the AP's Charles Della Desma.
Russia claims it's won control of Bakhmut after a grinding 9-month conflict in which tens of thousands of fighters died. But top Ukrainian military leaders say the battle's not over. Ukrainian officials acknowledge they now control only a small part of the city, but say their fighters' presence has played a key role in their strategy of exhausting the Russian military. And they say their current positions in surrounding areas will let them strike back inside Bakhmut, while Ukrainian forces are making significant advances just outside the 400-year-old city. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
For more on the situation in Bakhmut, I'm joined by New York Times Kyiv bureau chief Andrew Kramer. And I've started by asking him just who has control of the city.
Well, that was the question that was debated over the weekend at the G7 conference in Japan. Initially, there was a question to President Zelensky that his answer was ambiguous, that he was almost suggesting that the Ukrainians had lost the city, but then clarified that wasn't what he intended to say. Most military analysts who've looked at the situation, and even the commanding general of Ukraine's ground forces, said over the weekend that at most the Ukrainian army controls a tiny sliver in the southwest corner of the city. The spokesman for the eastern group of the Ukrainian military said that Ukrainian soldiers control a few houses, perhaps in this area called the Litak neighborhood, for a monument to a jet fighter airplane.
Many analysts have suggested that the whole reason why the Ukrainians were putting up such a fight in Bakhmut, because there was little strategic importance, was to draw the Russian military into a bigger fight, was to attack them and deplete their resources. Have they been successful at that?
We won't really know how successful this strategy was until after the war, until after we have reliable casualty figures from both sides. Thousands of soldiers died on both sides, on the Ukrainian side, on the Russian side. There's a general feeling that the attacking army would be losing more. The Russians would be losing more as they push through block by block in this very difficult urban fighting. But we won't know really the effectiveness of the strategy until the accurate casualty figures are known.
At the G7 summit, President Zelensky said that Bakhmut exists only in our hearts, meaning that the city is completely destroyed. What's it like there?
During the Battle of Bakhmut, you would hear explosions every few seconds, lots of small arms fire, sometimes quite close in. It was not clear where exactly the front, through which streets it ran. This intensity of artillery fire and mortar fire inside the city was incredibly destructive. You could drive through neighborhoods in eastern Bakhmut in January when I was there, and every house was burned or blown up in some way, damaged. The streets were just a muddy morass of potholes and craters from shelling. The destruction then spread to the western part of the city, and now the neighborhoods of high-rise apartment buildings are burned. All the windows are blown out. Many of them are completely reduced to rubble.
Do we know what city is going to be the next battlefront?
We wouldn't want to predict that. The Russians have asserted their goal in the war is to capture the entire Donbass region, which would include cities such as Kramatorsk, where I am now, and Slavyansk. But the Ukrainians have positions in a rolling grassy hills to the west of Bakhmut, and this is high ground that provides them tactical advantage. It doesn't seem likely that Russia's exhausted forces now in Bakhmut would be able to break out and use this victory as a springboard to move farther in eastern Ukraine.
What about Ukraine's exhausted forces after holding back the Russians for so long? Are they able to push forward to continue to push the Russians back?
Well, this was some of the criticism of Ukraine's strategy in the fighting in Bakhmut, that it was depleting some of its best forces, defending the city, losing experienced soldiers in the fight when it should be husbanding these resources for a counteroffensive in the southeast in the spring and summer, using Western-provided weaponry like Leopard 2 tanks from Germany and Bradley infantry fighting vehicles from the United States. Ukraine does have a reserve of soldiers, of 12 brigades of soldiers trained in Great Britain and Germany and elsewhere in Western Europe, and also some of them in Ukraine. These newly trained soldiers who are not taking part in the Battle of Bakhmut are the reserve for the coming counteroffensive, roughly 40,000 to 50,000 soldiers.
Andrew Kramer is the Kyiv bureau chief for the New York Times. We reached him in Kramatorsk. Mr. Kramer, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Karish. Kyiv's reaction to the G7 summit, plus news of a group of pro-Ukrainian Russian rebels clearing land along the border. We get the latest from Anna Chernikova in Kyiv.
Yes, actually quite a great news for Ukraine, and reaction in Ukraine is very positive, of course. And to be honest, this trip by President Zelensky to G7 meeting was, of course, unannounced in advance. But when it appeared that he is actually going to Japan, there were certain thoughts within the Ukrainian society that something really important should happen.
Now, changing gears a bit, Anna, I understand there is a developing story inside Russian territory near the border with Ukraine. Can you tell us what's going on?
Yes, something around early afternoon Ukrainian local time, the information appears that Russian battalions who are opposing a Putin regime, as they say, as they present themselves, they announced that they are moving toward deep into the Belgorod territory and moving towards basically along the border line with Ukraine, as they announce capturing some villages and, as they say, liberating those villages in order to create a certain safe line for Ukrainian civilians on the border with Russia in Belgorod region.
I'm sorry, forgive me for interrupting. Just to be clear, these are Russian people who have come together to fight against the Russian military and Putin's regime inside Russian territory.
Yes, exactly. These are Russian military volunteers. So we know about two groups of people who are involved in that. So, and the latest what we have from this Russian, actually the Legion, which is involved in this actions. So the Legion Free Russia, they announced that they are creating a demilitarized zone in Belgorod region, from where Russians would not be able to shell Ukraine, to shell the territory of Ukraine. And they said that for the future, they are moving to free the whole Russia from Putin dictatorship in order to stop the war. This is the quote from them. The advisor to the president office, Mr. Podolak, he commented and he said that Ukraine has nothing to do with this, that this is something which is done by the Russian citizens. No Ukrainian citizens are involved, or Ukraine as in any way is not involved in that. This is some basically internal movements inside Russia. And similar confirmation we have from the from the spokesperson of the Ukrainian intelligence. He also confirmed that this particular situation has only to do something to do with Russian citizens who are fighting, as they call themselves, they are fighting Putin's regime, and they want to liberate Russia from this regime. It's quite clear from President Zelensky, from all Ukrainian officials, military officials, that Ukraine is not fighting or go into the territory of Russia or fighting on the territory of Russia. Ukraine is only defending itself. So, but definitely this is a developing story to look at and to follow.
And follow it we will. Anna Chernikova in Kyiv. Anna, as always, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Steve.
Russian helicopters arrived in Zimbabwe on May 18th in what authorities say is part of an effort by Russia to strengthen relations between the two countries. However, analysts say Russia is rewarding Zimbabwe for not joining nations seeking to isolate Moscow for its invasion of Ukraine. Reporter Keith Baptist attended the event in Harare, and VOA's Africa editor Salem Solomon brings us this story.
Ladies and gentlemen, comrades and friends.
Russia held a handover ceremony of 18 Russian-built Ansan medical air and rescue helicopters to the Zimbabwean government at the country's international airport on May 18. Zimbabwe's president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, said the helicopters will help in disaster response and be used by the country's police force. He also took the opportunity to denounce long-running sanctions imposed by the U.S. and other nations for the use of violence against protesters and political opponents.
It's now 23 years under such yoke around our neck. The process, of course, we access science and technology from countries who are willing to support us. And the Russian Federation is one of them.
Russia's ambassador to Zimbabwe said the delivery was part of an eventual 32 helicopters that will be supplied to the country by 2025. The total value of the aircraft is $320 million. Sergei Chemzov, an ally of Russia's President Vladimir Putin and the chief executive officer of the state-owned defense conglomerate Rostec, which manufactures the helicopters, also spoke at the event. He thanked Zimbabwe for its diplomatic support. Chemzov said Zimbabwe is one of the countries that did not support anti-Russian actions at the international political arena. In turn, he says, the Russian Federation is always ready to give a helpful shoulder to the friendly nation.
I have to note that Zimbabwe is one of the countries that did not support anti-Russian actions at the international political arena. In turn, the Russian Federation is always ready to give a helpful shoulder to the friendly nation.
Jeffrey Smith, a human rights and pro-democracy activist with the nonprofit Vanguard Africa, says Russia needs allies in Africa and says the two nations have much in common.
They're both internationally isolated because of their anti-democratic leadership and the fact that they're beholden to, oppressive, autocratic, kleptocratic rule. They share much more in common than they have differences.
Some observers say Russia is looking to continue to expand its influence in Africa. Oleksandr Kovalenko is a military and political observer with the Information Resistance Group, a Ukrainian nonprofit organization countering Russian propaganda.
For Russian, Africa is very important. Springboard for a spread of influence, not just political, but also military and most importantly, resource expansion.
Critics of the deal point out that Zimbabwe is rich in natural resources like diamonds, platinum, gold and copper, which are of great interest to Russia. As the war in Ukraine and international sanctions continue to take a toll on Moscow, experts say Russia will continue to make overtures toward African countries. With Keith Baptist in Harare, Zimbabwe, Salem Solomon, VOA News.
And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day. Visit us online at voanews.com and on social media. Be sure to follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.